Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here with you. We got my guy, MG Marcus Grant, in the building. What's going on?
Where's the sun? Have we started June gloom early here?
We have. Well, I mean,
June gloom starts in like 12 hours, man. It's not that early.
But it's been gloomy for like the last couple days.
This is like the Black Friday sale starting on Thursday at 6. June gloom.
And I'm against that too.
A little bit of drizzling here.
If I actually were running for president, part of my platform would be you could not advertise for Christmas until actually after Thanksgiving.
That's not bad. I would vote for you on that.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I've seen Christmas stuff in a Target in September.
It's insane.
It's like they bypass Halloween and Thanksgiving.
I'm all about celebrating the holidays in order.
That's good.
They're all very good holidays. They should all be celebrated.
I agree with that, except Valentine's Day, which was a...
It's a scam.
Okay. We got the whiskey from Wisconsin, Alex Gellar. What's up?
Well, I was thinking that your intro sounds so smooth that it would be great to transition into some type of sponsorship. Like, you're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast presented by...
No one.
But instead, we're here to serve up some hot holiday takes on the order in which they should be promoted at stores and which ones are scams and not.
The Fantasy Maverick, one half of the Danger Zone tag team. Adam Rank. What's going on?
What's happening? So am I not allowed to be excited for a movie? Because, like, well, Wonder Woman's coming out before episode 8.
Oh, God.
So I can't start thinking about episode 8.
Geez.
Or can you, like, both think? And you know what? I don't know. This might be a little bit of a spoiler alert.
First of all,
is busy around the holidays, so sometimes it's nice to pick off some Christmas gifts.
Yeah,
a little bit early.
I'm not
cutting out. You know what the thing?
I was gonna say you're saying your Christmas gifts for people are like Christmas wreaths and decorations.
They might
be. Seems like kind of a suboptimal.
You know,
Christmas
don't judge
gift.
Me. What
Merry
if I want
Christmas,
to enjoy the season?
Here's some Christmas
here's
lights.
Don't tell me when I can celebrate holidays.
Your house is looking a little sparse. Here's a wreath.
Have you
Put
never
it up,
done
fool.
That for somebody? I get upset. Well, I get upset because our neighbors sometimes don't have enough holiday.
You also don't strike me as the guy that decorates your house for the holidays.
Or buys presents early.
Have you not seen our
Casa de Rank? No,
oh
I have not
God.
Seen
God. Like, dude.
You go crazy on it.
Our Instagram will show you, like, there's lights from our house to the neighbor's house.
I see.
And back and forth.
I see.
So we actually give lights to our neighbors because they're not
they're riding the wave
enough. Like, you're ruining it.
Yeah.
Like, stop.
Okay.
Stop having, like, these empty spots in our neighborhood.
We really hit the soft spot here.
I want NASA to know.
The deep underbelly of Adam Rank. I did not realize that you were such a Christmas holiday decorations junkie.
Not only that, I also do have Christmas gifts for people. Like,
what,
I will be, but they're usually for the nieces and nephews.
Okay.
Like,
why can't they be Halloween gifts?
Because we usually don't do gifts for Halloween.
Okay.
One of my nieces, she has a birthday in April. It's passed, and I saw something at Disneyland. I'm like, Tasha would like this. Yeah. So I bought it, and it's sitting in the closet now.
Fair enough.
She'll get it in December.
Fair enough. Enough holiday chatter here. We've got a great show lined up for you, the podcast listener. Today, we're going to be breaking down the AFC West, the Chiefs, the Raiders, the Broncos, and, of course, the L.A. Chargers. We're going to round out with a round of Daily Daps, but we start the show, as always, with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to have your kids, have your wife.
We'll start in Washington, D.C. Just a year removed from being a hot sleeper, Matt Jones all of a sudden finds himself on the outs in Washington. Jones is skipping OTAs and reportedly wants to be released or traded. It's rumored that Washington is shopping Matt Jones. Jones, the starter to start the year in 2016, got injured, lost the job to Fat Rob Kelly. Then the team drafted Samaje Perine to go along with Kelly and the pass-catching specialist Chris Thompson. Alex Gellhar, I'll start with you. Is there a landing spot for Matt Jones anywhere? And what does it mean for the Washington backfield?
I mean, he wasn't going to factor into it anyways, so if there is a landing spot out there for him, good for him.
Isn't it crazy how fast it moves?
I mean, yes and no. Like, Jones's kind of rise was a little bit puzzling to me. I mean, first when he got drafted in the third round or whatever, never thought he was going to make it that high in the draft because
right.
of what he did at Florida. And then, like, even he had those couple good games, but I thought even the tape that he put out here and his efficiency and stuff and then the fumbles were all rather troublesome. So, like, I don't think it's that crazy. I mean, it's not like Jones went from having a Jordan Howard-type season to now being on the chopping block.
He That's had, good point.
Like, an okay run of a few games, mired in a lot of troubles, and now is finding his way out the door.
By the way, MJD came out with a column giving us his take on all these veteran running back moves. We're talking about Marshawn Lynch to Oakland, yada, yada, yada. Remember, Maurice Jones-Drew was a noted fantasy enthusiast as well as being an absolute beast.
Who, MJD?
MJD.
One of the guys on Fantasy and Friends?
Yes, sir.
He's a okay, good.
Yes.
So he clarified that he's still currently a fantasy.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, but I just want to point out the fact that he wasn't a fantasy enthusiast once he got on the show.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
He's been a long-time guy playing in fantasy for, I mean, forever, which is great. Which is it. And he was one of the first star players, really, to advertise the fact that he was so into fantasy football.
That's true.
So it's good. All right, so he wrote a column. You can find it on NFL.com. Has he written a column before? Does anyone know?
I know he wrote a fantasy column once for us.
Yeah, he sent us in some stuff. I mean, okay. I think he pops in every now and again with stuff for Ali Bonpare's original content team.
Gotcha. But. All right, so he wrote a column for NFL.com. He talks about all these veteran running back moves. We'll get to a few. I'll let you read a few, but just a couple that I wanted to hit. How about LeGarrette Blount? He's projecting that Leggy Blount in Philadelphia can run between 11 and 1,200 yards rushing, okay, and 12 to 15 touchdowns.
That's hefty.
That's an aggressive.
The touchdowns seem a little aggressive.
1,100, 1,200, that's okay?
Even then. I think all of it is probably a little aggressive. But that's the thing. That's the running back mentality is that MJD won't listen to reason. And when you tell him, like, dude, he's not going there and he's not going to do that, he's like, bruh, he's – and, you know, it's like running back, like they always think that they overestimate not only themselves but how good all their contemporaries are as well.
Okay.
Like that guy's – like he'll go – and I'm like, it's just not – he's just not going to get the opportunity to do that. I should have said that the yards seemed more aggressive because I could see a scenario where he ends up getting touchdowns.
12.
If they get a lot of opportunity, but that's then you're looking at a guy who has been pretty touchdown dependent, expecting him to go in there and get 12. It's a risky thing. It seemed cool with the Patriots because you knew that offense was going to be explosive, but even then you were kind of rolling the dice and you wonder, you know, if Rob Gronkowski wasn't hurt for a long time, like would he have gotten as many
that's a great point.
Red zone opportunities? And then I look at the Eagles and I'm like, well, who's going to be the guy who, when they get near the goal line, like who is the other person outside of Zach Ertz at the end of the season? In the six games he plays next season.
Oh, come on. Believe in Alshon. Why not? No.
I wanted to.
Okay.
And he never really produced like he was supposed to.
Okay. All right, fine. He also is projecting Danny Woodhead. He says Danny Woodhead. I figure you guys get a kick out of this one. Danny Woodhead, he says, is going to be Baltimore's new Ray Rice. 450 yards rushing, 500 receiving, so 950 total, 7 touchdowns. Danny Woodhead in Baltimore, good projections, aggressive?
I think the projection is fine, but that's Ray Rice never had a season like that. He always had a lot more production.
All right.
So, like, I don't get the Ray Rice comparison, but I think Danny Woodhead, I mean, that's kind of his vein is he'll get, you know, 800 to 1,000 total yards and find his way into the end zone a handful of times.
All right, there you go. You guys excited about Danny Woodhead in Baltimore?
Of course.
How could you not be? How could you not be? Terrence West is there.
I kind of like Terrence West in that situation.
Do you?
I think Woodhead is fine. I think that San Diego found a really nice rhythm with him and a way to utilize him. I'm not sure that Baltimore's going to do the same. It's not like – if Mike McCoy had moved there, Mike McCoy didn't go there, right?
No,
Mike McCoy's
he went back to Denver.
Yes.
So I'm not expecting. So funny. I'm not expecting him to have that kind of. It's a dangerous game to be like, well, if he had this here,
yeah,
then that same production's gonna have like that's not the way it always works. So
I'm excited because I think he's gonna help fill the role voided by Kyle Juszczyk, who left, and he had 49 targets there last year. I think he had 50 some the year before, even more. They like to throw to their backs in Baltimore. Joe Flacco has a history of doing that with Ray Rice. I mean, last year Terrence West had over 40 targets. So did Kenneth Dixon.
That's the thing. It's like Terrence West can catch the ball as well.
Yeah, he'll
catch. And then when Kenny Dixon comes back,
It was never like Woodhead was the only back catching passes in San Diego and stuff too.
He was. He literally was.
Sorry, my bad. He caught every pass.
Every single one. Right.
I wonder too if they'll utilize him. You know, and we're seeing this movement, right, of versatile running backs being moved into the slot. I wonder if they'll do that in Baltimore with him as well, because they don't really have a lot of pass catchers there.
Well, they don't have I don't feel like without Steve Smith, they don't have one of those designated guys that you would expect to run in the slot, like Wallace, Perriman. They can do a little bit of it there, but Woodhead would be a nice mismatch with how quick he is in the short areas.
That's what makes it at least a little bit more interesting for me if I were to spend a late round flyer on Dennis.
Other question to ask yourself,
yes, please.
And this is sort of an unknown, is, I mean, we saw Dennis Pitta last year come back and have a decent season. Only had the two touchdowns, but
weren't they both in one game?
Over 700 yards receiving, had 120 targets. You wonder, does he start to see more red zone targets too this year?
Okay. That's an interesting thought. Dennis Pitta, man. Talk about a guy coming off the scrap heap, man.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, let's break down the AFC West. We'll start with the Chiefs. They went 12-4 last year. We'll start in their backfield. Spencer Ware is the starter, we believe. But there are some serious rumblings that rookie Kareem Hunt could challenge there. As a result, Ware has some pretty volatile value right now. Per Fantasy Pros, he's ranked anywhere between 27 and 110. That is a wide margin there. Marcus, where you got Spencer Ware?
What we saw out of Spencer Ware last year is kind of what we're going to get. It's just, for me,
he's still a young guy.
Just for me, the Chiefs offense does nothing to move the needle.
Okay.
Just in general. It's just bland. I do like the way Andy Reid uses his running back, so I guess there's that. I think you'll see Spencer Ware probably around 900 or so yards. You know, if he can get you 5 or 6 touchdowns, I think that's kind of what you're looking for. I just don't know that there's much else there available in what is a generally play it safe, stay conservative, just try not to lose the ball game sort of offense at the Chiefs.
So not great upside you're seeing with Spencer Ware. Is that what I'm hearing?
Pretty much. I mean, I think he is what he is at this point. And so if you're getting him as an RB2, great. Enjoy it. I guess he probably, I don't know, I guess in this new world era where I am just, so sad about the death of running backs, I guess he's a fringe RB1 now, but.
He fits your narrative, pal.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, there you go.
Pretty much.
Can you talk to me about Kareem Hunt?
Other than I love him?
That's what I'm saying. I know you love him. Talk to me about Kareem Hunt.
I think he will eventually surpass Charkandrick West. I think it could happen even by week one or certainly early in the season.
I think he already did.
I'm not putting a lot of stock into some of these OTA reports. Whatever. We'll wait till we get to training camp to kind of put more stock into it. But I think, certainly early in the season, he can surpass Charkandrick West. I don't think he's going to get Spencer Ware just yet, but I love everything he does, and I think he's a great fit for an Andy Reid offense.
Tyreek Hill broke through big time last year. The wide receiver 15 last year. It's crazy. 267 rush yards, 593 receiving yards. He had 9 total scores. I feel like he had one more, actually, that I'm missing here. A special team.
Well, it doesn't count. I think he had a couple special team touchdowns, but those don't count for standard fantasy scoring.
Okay. Well, on our side, it doesn't, but I think on other sides, it does. But
Most of them don't count it in standard,
I'm
pretty sure.
All right, there you go. Double-digit scores in 7 of his final 11 weeks. He was actually pretty darn consistent, all things considered, considering this guy was picked up off the waiver wire.
By the way, for the record, he had 3 touchdowns on returns.
Really?
2 on punts, 1 on a kick.
Wow. Alex Gilhar, one-year wonder for Tyreek Hill, or is he legit?
No, I don't think he's a one-year wonder at all. I thought the Tavon Austin comparison was interesting. And you're speaking to Tavon Austin's 2015 season,
right,
where he was the wide receiver 25, which prompted our very own Marcus Grant to write a heartfelt missive about why Tavon Austin could be a sleeper last year.
Why you got to bring up old stuff?
I'm just painting the picture of the history of Tavon Austin here. But I think the big difference is that Hill was used a lot more as a rookie, and Austin was a couple years into the league in 2015 as a traditional wide receiver than Austin was. In that 2015 season, Austin only played about 72% of his snaps out wide. That's dropped since then. He only played like 40-some last year. Hill played 52% of his snaps out wide as a rookie, and even though he played fewer than Austin, had almost as many yards, more touchdowns, and a higher yards per catch, working outside as a traditional wide receiver. On top of that, Austin had way more yards come from his rushing totals that year. He had 47.9% of his fantasy points came from rushing. Only 32% came from Hill this past year.
Okay.
He's got some nice ability as a receiver out there. He can gain some separation also because he's freakishly fast.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's a one-hit wonder. I think right now he's being relatively appropriately valued, kind of in that wide receiver 3 flex range, because Macklin's coming back. He was just rabid.
And wasn't that one of the big storylines last year, that Macklin was gone and all of a sudden we saw Tyreek Hill emerge?
He was ravaged with injuries last year, was not effective at all, and Tyreek Hill came in. Travis Kelce still there, became a bigger focal point of the offense. And as Marcus said, this isn't a unit that, you know, is like the Saints and is going to pass it a bunch or light up the scoreboard on a regular basis. So
still got Alex Smith back there. So
touchdowns could be harder to come by, but I think Hill would be the type of guy that could at least offer a safe-ish yardage floor and have the potential for those like week-winning performances.
If he's in your flex, I think you got to feel pretty good about that, no?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I like him there.
James, I'm going to ask you a question about Tyreek Hill.
Please.
Because this was something that was raised on Twitter, because we both were talking about
Joe Mixon. Yeah.
Not drafting him. And somebody tweeted us, and they had a number of, do you avoid, and I don't think he was trying to be a sarcastic.
He wasn't trolling us.
But he was asking, do you not draft it? He had Larry Fitzgerald in there, which I didn't get.
I didn't get that either.
I'm like, one of the greatest guys in the league?
Right.
Like, I don't know how his name got into that mix, but Tyreek Hill definitely falls in there. Where do you pick him up? Is Tyreek Hill also,
you know,
on your,
I think,
do not draft list?
I mean, the number one thing for Joe Mixon is there is unbelievable evidence and the video. Right. So you could say, oh, well, you know, how are you judging a guy? Well, listen, man, I mean, if you're going into the court of law and there is video of you doing something, it's game over.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, am I giving Tyreek Hill the benefit of the doubt? Not really. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously there's some question marks there, but I mean, I got to be honest with you. It's not like I read his court report. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
If the court report had pictures a la Greg Hardy, then, yeah, I'm not touching Tyreek Hill either. But I got to be honest with you, I didn't do the research on Tyreek Hill's past. So that's kind of where I stand. And like I said, if it's that egregious, like Joe Mixon,
I mean, I think
I don't feel that bad.
Didn't he punch his pregnant girlfriend?
Who, Tyreek Hill?
Yeah.
I think that was the allegation. Sure, yeah, absolutely.
The allegation.
But I don't, like I said, did I do research into that? I have no idea. I didn't do it. I know that those charges are out there. I just didn't do, you know, my homework into Tyreek Hill. That's all. So that's kind of where I stand. Look, if it was, like I said, if it was a la Greg Hardy,
yeah.
Pictures or whatever. Like, like I said, maybe it's on me because I didn't read the court report, but I just didn't. So that's kind of where I stand. All right, we'll get back to fantasy. How about Travis Kelce? He's widely regarded as the tight end 2, ahead of Jordan Reed, ahead of Greg Olsen. Ranked in the 40s. Mm-hmm. He was the tight end 1 last year, which right. always surprises me, by the way, when I look at that. I'm like, Travis Kelce was the tight end 1 last year. He had 4 touchdowns total, Adam Rank.
Well, a part of it is because of the position. Nobody really was there to step up in that void left by Rob Gronkowski. Jordan right. Reed's battling injuries. The Panthers had kind of a down year, and Greg Olsen is getting a little bit older. And now, as we move into 2017, he's going to be fighting players like Christian McCaffrey. And I think Curtis Samuel's going to get a lot of designed plays for him. So his value could also take a bit of a tumble. Kelce, to me, seems like the safest. And he got over 1,000 receiving yards, which to me is huge, which it shows he's a huge part of the offense. The touchdowns, it's kind of a wild card, because you would hope that you're tight end gets targeted a little bit more in the red zone.
Right.
And it's just not coming. But he's
a weird targets there, though.
He's a weird mix, because he's more wide receiver than he is tight end. Mike Evans, a player like that fits into that mold of like red zone target more than Travis Kelce would. Or even like if you go back to Jimmy Graham during his heyday, like he was so big and tall, you had to throw him the football when you got near the goal line. Kelsey's not that dude. And I'm just saying this. I should have researched this, but I've been neck deep in some other stuff here at work, so I didn't. But I was like, I just have the perception that every one of Kelsey's four touchdowns was a catch and run somehow.
Well, one of them was, and it's very.
I think that one stands out to me.
Sure, it's an 80-yard catch and run.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
It just feels like they're all
broken coverage. Broken coverage, 80-yard score.
He's an athletic dude, and he makes plays.
Right,
but it doesn't seem like he doesn't seem big enough to kind of work that to his advantage, like a lot of other tight ends would do. So, like Jason Witten can somehow get open.
To provide context, he had 7 targets inside the 10-yard line, one of which was a touchdown. He had 16 targets in the red zone, led the team 3 touchdowns inside the 20. So of his 4 touchdowns, 3
of
came
them.
Inside the 20, 1 came inside the 10, and the 4th was that.
But he's breaking those because it's not like Alex Smith can throw 20 yards.
How dare you?
He's throwing a 10-yard
He's still
out.
Breaking it. Yeah,
breaking
he's still breaking it and making a move.
That's a good point. I just think at that value in the 40s, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, Marcus and Alex, but I just feel like that's too high of a – I'm not even saying that he's not necessarily going to be the tight end too. I just think in the 40s, to take a tight end there in the 40s, that's tough for me.
But you're taking a tight end that you know you can count on week after week, which is
I mean, can you though?
He was a TE1. You're talking about him being a top 3 tight end right now.
He had 6 100-yard games last year.
At
He's also been pretty consistent the 2 years prior. I think this was a taste of, like, would you be surprised if Travis Kelce, as talented as he is, ended up with, like, 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns next year if he broke a few more or they actually targeted
him? To be honest with you, I wouldn't. But here's the thing, though. Here's the tricky part for me. I think that there's going to be 4 or 5 guys in that 800 to 1,000-yard range that also pull in anywhere between, 6 to 8 touchdowns. So relative value-wise, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little rich for my blood, but it's also the ceiling. Like, I mean, Greg Olsen's been a top, 3 ranked tight end for the last several years. He's a guy that only ever gets 1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns, too.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it's safety, but with a ceiling. Like, who has the higher ceiling this year, him or Greg Olsen? It'd be Kelce.
Well, is it him or Jordan Reed?
Well, yeah, Jordan Reed, too. But
Jordan Reed's going in the 60s. So that's kind of where I would put Kelce, in that 60s range.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing. I'd rather take him lower, but I can understand people taking him this high.
All right, there you go. The Raiders at 12-4 last year. Obviously, they broke through in a big-time way from a team standpoint. Quarterback Derek Carr was a nice find as well before his injury. We hope he comes back and is slinging it. Marshawn Lynch, though, was the big storyline in the offseason. He had some town business to attend to, playing for his hometown team now. Former Raider MJD projects Marshawn to go for 850 on the ground with 10 touchdowns. Rank it down with that projection.
You know, there he goes breaking the narrative that I had put out there for him, that MJD was going to overestimate what Marshawn Lynch was able to do. But I believe he's being a little conservative on his yards. He's getting double-digit touchdowns. That's going to happen. If Marshawn Lynch stays healthy and plays the majority of the year, he's getting double-digit touchdowns. That offensive line is way too good. So he's gonna hit those marks. I think that's somebody I'm willing to go in on. And I know that older running backs –
Please don't take him in the 5th round.
No.
Please don't
take him. I'll take him before the 5th round.
Okay, like
if I'm sitting there in the 4th round and I have a choice between Travis Kelce and Marshawn Lynch – I'm taking Lynch.
All day long.
Absolutely. You can count on him to score touchdowns. It would almost be impossible for him not to. Mm-hmm. To be healthy and to play most of the season. I'll say, listen, he's a veteran. He'll probably get dinged up a game or here, but a prolific Raiders offense that's going to give him every opportunity once they get inside the 10-yard line, and they're not going to make that mistake. They're not going to Pete Carroll him. They're not going to try to get too fancy. They're going to Marshawn Lynch.
True. All right, true. Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree separated but just 1 fantasy point last year. Crabs with 150 total fantasy points, Coop with 149. 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns for Michael Crabtree, 1,153 and 5 touchdowns for Amari Cooper. Despite this, Amari being ranked and taken about 2 rounds before Michael Crabtree, 20s versus the 40s, we're seeing Crabtree go. Marcus, at those prices, who do you prefer?
It's Crabs all day. All day.
All day long.
All day. I mean, let's think about it. The first 2 years that Amari Cooper has been in the NFL, he has been outperformed fantasy-wise by Michael Crabtree.
True.
you know, Crabtree gets a lot of those tough catches. He seems to be the guy, especially we saw earlier in the year, last year, that he was the guy like Derek Carr trusted on key third downs. He got a lot of looks in the red. Seth Roberts was more productive in the red zone last year than Amari Cooper was.
Weird.
You know, now you add to the fact that Marshawn Lynch is here, and he's going to be the guy who gets a lot of those short yardage goal line red zone carries, which makes it even harder for Amari Cooper to get those looks in the red zone. So right now, and I like Amari Cooper. I think he's a talented player, but if we're talking about value and for the price, yeah, I would rather have Michael Crabtree.
Alex, you agree with that?
I agree. We keep spinning this narrative and hoping that Amari Cooper could be more used in the red zone, but the simple fact of the matter is he hasn't, and he hasn't been very effective there. Over the last 2 years, Crabtree, 34 targets in the red zone, 8 touchdowns. Cooper, 20 targets in the red zone, 2 touchdowns. Seth Roberts, 29 targets in the red zone, 9 touchdowns.
More targets for Seth Roberts in the red zone?
Than Cooper, and more touchdowns even than Crabtree. So I think, you know, when it comes down to this, like, I understand, like, Amari Cooper was a big play specialist in college. We have seen him make big plays here.
Yep.
But being reliant on that feels risky for a guy that we're drafting as like a low end wide receiver one, high end wide receiver two.
Yeah.
I'd much rather wait around and get Crabtree.
You know,
considering they're probably, like, I could see Cooper hitting a few more of those big plays and outscoring Crabtree, but they're going to score close to the same amount of points, and I'd rather take the guy that's coming 20 picks later.
Yeah, you're not wrong, and I think the valuation there for Amari Cooper is housed a lot in the fact that he's younger, right? He's entering his third season.
He's great. He's super talented. Yeah. But I just think Crabtree makes more sense in fantasy.
There you go. The Broncos, 9-7 last year. C.J. Anderson missed the final 9 games after tearing his meniscus. Didn't look that great even when he was healthy. He was okay. He was okay. He wasn't bad, but he was just okay. Meanwhile, Maurice Jones-Drew is projecting veteran Jamaal Charles to go for 825 and 10 touchdowns.
That's spicy for a dude who may not even be on the roster.
He's 50-50 to make the roster, according to Mike Kliss from there in 9 News in Denver. But meanwhile, MJD says Jamaal Charles, JC, could go for 825 on the ground and 10 touchdowns. Alex Gellhart.
Okay, I'm glad that he got back on the narrative again.
Now he's back. He had a minor step into reality, and then he had to jump back onto the crazy train.
Alex Gellhart, your thoughts on this entire backfield?
I am still a C.J. Anderson fan. I disagree from you a little bit in that he looked like just okay last year. He played pretty well early. That offensive line was a disaster for much of last year.
Maybe that's what it was.
And there were a number of games. I was actually just looking this back up because I remember my father angrily texting me expletives over a frustrating game C.J. Anderson was having against the Chargers. It was not only were the Broncos struggling, but C.J. Anderson kept getting good runs called back on holds and stuff that weren't even – he had like a couple 10-yarders, a 15-yarder. I think he even had a touchdown that would have like won them the game in the fourth quarter called back on a penalty. So like all those things in only his 7 games could have helped him out. But,
okay,
I mean, Booker didn't, you know – particularly apply himself very well when he was given the starting role. Jamaal Charles, we said, old, coming off a ton of injuries, like long shot to make the roster. I think Anderson's going to fall in drafts, and if he can fall to the right spot, it could be a nice value.
There you go.
Like, he was on pace, and hashtag on pace,
yeah!
He'll become the new Mark Ingram for us. But he was on pace for about a 1,200 to 1,300 yard total yard season and close to 10 touchdowns.
You'll take that all day long.
Yes.
Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, I get sad thinking about these guys. Stuck there with Trevor Siemian and or Paxton Lynch next year. DT had 1083 through the air, 5 touchdowns. Emmanuel Sanders, 1032 receiving, 5 touchdowns. Just 2.7 points separated the pair last year. Despite that, Demaryius Thomas is going around the 4th round in 10-team standard leagues. Sanders is going around round 6. How to rank your thoughts there?
I really like that McCoy's going back there, though. And I think that's going to bring some stability. Whoever they're going to end up going with, I think Trevor Siemian at times looked like a credible quarterback. They have to fix the offensive line. That's the hardest thing is when you have a quarterback trying to learn on the job and get better and progress. If that offensive line is not giving you time to get the receivers the football, it's not going to work. So I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I know 4th round for DT is way too early. I mean, I would agree. Have to see how this shakes out, but I'm like, nope, I don't want any part
But he's
of that.
In the best shape of his life, bro.
That's true. That's true. And Emmanuel Sanders in the 6th. Now you're starting to talk like, yeah, okay, I would rather go for that. If I had to pick between the two. I think that targeting Sanders.
Emmanuel Sanders.
I got it. Just made him one word.
I like it.
Just made it easier.
Yeah.
I would go with him in the sixth round because he's going to be a much better value. But I do think am I wrong? I think Trevor Siemian can be pretty good. I think if you give him a chance.
I think the issue.
Ever since, I think the issue
is he may not get a chance. It may end up being Paxton Lynch.
No, it's not.
I mean, they spent.
Saying that, but I just think
they spent the first round draft pick on Paxton Lynch. People are forgetting here.
That happens. Sometimes that happens.
I mean, you got to give him at least a chance. No, I mean they didn't even give him a chance.
Maybe not this year. I mean, it's up. Well, you know, and you bring in an offensive coordinator and a head coach who do not have a tie to Paxton Lynch. I mean,
that's true.
That's the one thing is that these guys can go in and say, you know what, I'm going to pick the quarterback that I think is the best, who's giving us the best opportunity to win. But neither one of these guys have any ties to him. And I think that Elway would understand, like, look, like, we don't care. Like, I'm sorry that you spent a first round.
I think the loss of Gary Kubiak, though, is going to be disastrous. I do. He's been so great working with quarterbacks. And now all of a sudden he's gone. They're learning a brand new system. I mean, it's a tough division. I don't know. I'm anticipating bad things for that Broncos offense this year. All right, the Chargers were 5-11 last year. Melvin Gordon was your RB8. After much hand-wringing his rookie year, he actually played pretty well in his sophomore campaign. 997 on the ground, 419 through the air, basically 1,400 total yards, 12 total touchdowns. He was a stats beast, but Marcus, let me ask you this. Can he do it again? Because some of those efficiency metrics, man, they were scary, just 3.9 yards per carry.
I mean, I guess I would be more worried if there was somebody who's going to take touches away from him. I know people. I've seen it on Twitter that people are freaked out about the efficiency and stuff. One, 3.9 isn't awful. You know, I mean, I know everybody wants it to be above
four. It's not?
Four. Everybody wants it to be above four, right? But I mean, let's think about this real. Okay. Let's think about this in reality, right?
All right.
3.9 yards per carry. You run it three times, you got a first down. I mean, no, for real. Like, you run the ball three times.
It only
times
works that way.
No, but I'm just saying, if we're talking average, because that's the freak out, right? Because it's the average is 3.9. But if you're talking about averaging 3.9 yards every time you touch the ball, you run it three times, that's a first down, you keep on marching down the field.
Yeah,
there's
the game plan. Just run it every time.
Hey, look, I've met high school coaches who thought worse. So, you know, so there's nobody that's going to come in and take touches from him.
Okay.
I mean, maybe the 10 touchdowns, the 10 rushing touchdowns may be tough, but what are you worried about, Brandon Oliver?
Olivier, best shape of his life.
I feel like you just made that up, by the way.
No, Olivier, like, they're talking big about him.
Are they?
Yeah, they're talking him up. Here in Los Angeles. I was about to say down in San Diego. No, it is down in San Diego because that's where they're practicing.
Yeah, that's where they're practicing.
Because they haven't had their facility up and running yet because they probably didn't think that through. Dude, I'm just thinking Melvin Gordon regression.
Okay.
Because Wikipedia defines regression as this Wisconsin running back's not going to do it again.
Oh, my God.
Here's my thing on Melvin Gordon.
Yes.
Yes, the efficiency was bad last year.
Okay.
But his offensive line was mangled and shuffled up.
Yeah, so bad.
There was a deficiency in the passing game because everybody was injured. And Phillip Rivers fell apart down the stretch. So you look at the fact that he still almost put up 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, and just shy of 4 yards a carry in that disastrous situation. You come back now with a fully loaded offense that should have more scoring opportunities.
I'll buy.
That has a better correlation with like a running back success than quote-unquote efficiency metrics.
Right,
But the efficiency metric shows that he shouldn't have been as productive as he was, which means that those numbers
especially
are going to slide.
The touchdowns.
They're going to slide back down. It's like, because that's how, like, with baseball metrics, you always look at it like, well, this guy's got 12 home runs, but his metrics show that he's going to regress. And then you see in the second half of the season, he has, well, I know this because I used to have Mark Trumbo all the time and on my fantasy team. So I would know. And that's why, like, these guys are streaky and everything like that. And it could be a situation where Gordon outperformed what his metrics tell you he should be performing and that he will go back to being the running back that he was as a rookie.
I mean, which metrics indicated that he shouldn't have been as successful, though? I mean, he saw 71 opportunities in the red zone. Like, they gave him the ball plenty there, and he scored 12 times.
Yeah,
like,
but couldn't they argue?
Yards per carry isn't that indicative of future or negative fantasy success.
Yeah, but if he's not that effective as a runner, that means that he could be shut down in those red zone opportunities. And now you're depending on him to reach that 12 touchdown mark that he probably just doesn't have the ability to get to.
That's kind of where I would worry too. I don't know if he's going to get those double digit touchdowns next year.
Maybe not. Double digit touchdowns is hard to repeat. But I mean, right. If we're saying that because he wasn't that effective, he's going to score less, even though he wasn't effective and he still scored 12 touchdowns, I don't quite follow the logic in that sentence.
Well, why are you trying to take the few running backs we still have left away from us?
Yeah, dude's going to be a workhorse.
Like,
it's not going to, but he's outperforming what he's actually doing.
I think that's fair. I think that's the point, right? That if you look at
why Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers was successful on 4 Hail Marys last year. So why doesn't he go back and do that every play?
Why not?
It's like, I don't know. He probably should. But it's like, because, well, that's not always going to work. And so Gordon was able to outperform.
It's a great analogy.
What the numbers say he should be doing.
To one high variance play versus like a running back and all these plays. I don't think that's a great analogy. They're two different things.
No, I think
I don't know how else to explain it. Is that he's outperforming his metrics, which over the course of a career would mean that he's going to come back to the running back that he is. I mean, the NFL has prime examples, and if I would have thought this through enough, I would have gone through and looked them up, of players who have one season where they outperform their numbers, you know, where they outperform what their metrics will tell you what they should be doing. And this was a magical circumstance for Gordon to go out there and get double-digit touchdowns, and then going forward, he's going to go back to being an 8-touchdown type of back.
Right. I'm not sitting here defending that he's going to get 12 every time. I just think, like, that's going to happen. Like, he's going to touchdowns will fluctuate. They are the hardest thing to predict.
If I'm understanding you correctly, though, Alex, what you are arguing, though, is that his situation is likely to improve, which would help his metrics improve as
well.
Yes.
We also don't know if this is an outlier. His rookie year, you know, he was banged up. There were also a lot of things like
he was terrible his rookie year.
He also looked significantly better even in just how he ran and he powered through last
You're
year.
Right.
So I just think it's foolish.
Some growth
to just,
potential, a little bit more health on the offensive line.
So then, James, who would you rather have?
Yes.
Melvin Gordon or Jay Ajayi?
Jay Ajayi.
Well, it depends where you're going to have to draft him, because like Melvin Gordon is now
being
talked
about. They have a similar price,
don't
they? I don't think they're similar, but if we're worried about Melvin Gordon's Jay Ajayi had 3 200-yard games last year, which completely throws everything out of whack with him.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, but I think the argument for Melvin Gordon should be: would you rather have Melvin Gordon or LeSean McCoy, Mike Evans, AJ Green, Jordan Howard?
Is that where he's being
Devontae?
Right now?
Yeah, he's the
mid-teens. I'd take Melvin Gordon 100 out of 100 times over Jordan Howard.
I don't know. Jordan Howard, BSOHL. I saw he's slimmed down. People are excited.
Give me the running back on the good offense that's going to score a lot of points, not the one led by Mike Glennon / Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, yeah. I gave that silent pause because I had to think about that for a second. But you know what?
His offensive line is way better. He's going to get more opportunity.
Whose offensive line is way better?
The Bears.
Oh, okay.
Especially the interior.
Yeah.
Where it really counts.
Although they're coming in banged up too, though.
No, they'll be.
They've got Josh Sitton's another year older and missed a bunch of games still
last
year.
How long? Still recovering? I don't know. Anyways, whatever. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about, we went down a crazy Melvin Gordon rabbit hole. Keenan Allen is back, because
he's going in the first round. That's why. Like, this is going to be a Todd Gurley type of situation.
For Melvin Gordon?
Okay. Wow.
We need a write-up.
Let's make it happen.
Okay. Adam Reich is going to get you this write-up. I'm telling you.
What?
Yes, that's right.
You're going to get in line.
The team gets a healthy Keenan Allen back, theoretically anyways. He blew out his ACL last year. They add Clemson big play receiver Mike Williams into the mix with Tyrell Williams and Travis Benjamin. Rank, tell us why you're so high on Mike Williams.
I feel the Chargers are going to have to throw the ball more than anything, and I still think that they have some concerns, especially with Keenan Allen, who's battled injuries throughout his entire career. And so at some point, Mike Williams is going to be
the go-to
top
guy
receiver. He really is. And I I pause because, you know, I don't want to get too locked up into what he was able to do at Clemson, but you see a guy out there, and I guess you could have said this about Laquon Treadwell, like how good he looked, but God, Mike Williams just looks so great at Clemson, and I think that the Chargers taking him in that seven spot when everybody was saying, like, they're, you know, because people were giving me grief for saying that they were going to take Christian McCaffrey, but they're like, there's no way, they're drafting defense automatic. And for them to have a serious need in the defensive secondary, and they still went with Mike Williams.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
They might not believe in Keenan Allen. Mm. They might want to have a little bit of insurance. And Tyrell Williams was fine.
Fine.
Like, he was good. Like, yeah. He was serviceable. Mm-hmm. But when you take a serviceable player like that and try to make him a number one receiver,
doesn't
always work. Like, right. Marvin Jones last year. So I think that if Mike Williams can come in, and I think having Keenan Allen there for as long as he can be on the field will only benefit him. And I think Travis Benjamin is a good fit for that offense too, not necessarily the best fantasy fit. But I think Mike Williams can step in and be productive right away.
I love what he does in conjunction with what Phillip Rivers does too, right? Because Phillip Rivers loves to sit back there and look for the big play.
Yeah.
And Mike Williams is one of the best big play receivers out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he already has that chemistry with big body receivers all throughout his entire career, right?
He's such a perfect Chargers receiver. Like,
I love
once
it.
They made that move, you're like, oh, I should have thought of that. I got enamored with the Woodhead McCaffrey type thing, where you're like, oh, I see it now. Like, that was a pretty good pick for them.
Alex Gailhart, give me your take on Keenan Allen and Tyrell Williams.
I think you're right, Rank, that Mike Williams probably is a little bit of Keenan Allen insurance. Like, worst case scenario, if Allen's injuries continue to catch up with him, they have a new guy who can step in and be the number one. Best case scenario, Allen stays healthy, and now they're just loaded at wide receiver to make a Super Bowl run before Phillip Rivers hangs him up. So I think Allen is still – he's never going to push the, like, absurd number of catch pace or whatever he was on before he got injured, especially with all these guys here now. But I think he's still a good
value. What was he on pace for, like 140 receptions?
Something outrageous. But I still think he's going to be a solid guy. He's probably going to be Phillip Rivers' go-to, at least for now. And he's appropriately valued in, like, the middle of the third round or wherever he's going because of his injuries.
Okay.
As for Tyrell Williams, I think he's totally worth taking a late-round stab at. Like, I was looking at his ADP currently.
Where's he going?
In MFL's 12-team leagues, he's going in the ninth round. He and Mike Williams, interestingly, are going on average at pick 112 and then pick 113.
Really?
On Fantasy Football Calculator, Tyrell's going four rounds later than Mike Williams.
Hmm.
So, because the MFLs are typically a little more like sharp drafters, I think, than Fantasy Football Calculator later, which is a little more casual.
Yep.
So I think Williams is certainly worth a stab. Like, I mean, we don't know Keenan Allen's health. We don't quite yet know how Mike Williams is going to transition to the NFL. It's worth a shot. Worst case scenario, you cut him. Best case scenario, you might have like a matchup-based flex guy.
I like that.
In
like
games that figure to be shootouts and things like that.
All right, there's also reports that Hunter Henry will be the, quote, main tight end next year, but that Antonio Gates will still be mixed in on third downs and in red zone situations. This sounds like a tight end by committee situation there in San Diego. I don't know. I know a lot of folks were very high on Hunter Henry going into 2017.
Like me.
I think these reports, though, it makes me dampen at least the touchdown upside for Hunter Henry. And if we're talking about touchdown upside for a tight end, oh, man, that makes it tough. All right, we move on. All right, open floor.
Right, real quick before we leave San Diego, I had accidentally had a separate year clicked. Gordon had 58 opportunities in the red zone last year. I said a higher number before. That
said 71.
71.
All right, open floor. Give me a fantasy storyline very quickly that I'm missing in the AFC West. We'll start with you, MG, my guy Marcus Grant.
I mean, I think going back to Denver and their quarterback situation, I mean, I think that's going to be interesting there. I mean, yeah, Simeon obviously comes in as the incumbent, but the early scuttlebutt out of Denver is that, you know, they're going to give Paxton Lynch every opportunity to try to be the starting quarterback this year, and I think that changes the way the offense works. I think it suddenly turns into, you know, Lynch seems to be a little bit more of a freewheeling guy who's going to, you know, try to make plays with his legs, at least extend plays with his legs, get out of the pocket and go downfield. So, you know, the Broncos, I think, have been very adept at running that bubble screen, that wide receiver screen, and letting guys like Sanders and Thomas take it the rest of the way. But this could be a thing where maybe you start to see those guys as more downfield threats, which we know they can be if Lynch decides he wants to, if Lynch ends up being the quarterback and decides he wants to just kind of air it out occasionally.
Alex Gilhar, storyline in the AFC West.
We touched on it briefly talking about Tyreek Hill, but the return of Jeremy Maclin. If he is fully healthy, I didn't put that stupid of me. Wow. this is a guy that in 2015 at 124 targets, 87 catches, over 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns in this Alex Smith-led offense. How is this going to break down with Travis Kelce? They finally started using him like a feature weapon he should be last year. Is that going to change?
Interesting.
Are Maclin and Hill going to vulture each other? Is this offense suddenly going to take flight and actually score more touchdowns with Alex Smith under center?
That would be crazy.
A lot of question marks, but we cannot forget about Jeremy Maclin. This is a good player who's commanded a lot of volume in the past, and one injury-ravaged situation isn't likely to change that for good.
Adam Rank, storyline in the AFC West.
Phillip Rivers being an undervalued fantasy quarterback, I think
Good calls all around here, people.
Like every year. Like the guy last year, he was a little bit banged up and things kind of got away from them.
He was great to start the year, though.
Like, yeah.
He was crushing it.
He was crushing it, but then he got crushed.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He threw too many interceptions.
Oh, God.
And he's not going to do that again. I don't think he's going to be in situations because a lot of times he was pressing. He was trying to make plays. He was trying to see something that wasn't there, but I don't think that's going to be a problem this year. I think with the bevy of wide receivers at his disposal. And I really do believe that Hunter Henry is going to step up. How many touchdowns is Antonio Gates away from the record?
Just a couple. It's not many.
He missed it by, like, what, 3 last year or something?
Yeah, just get him his GD record already.
Right.
And then let him go.
And then we can go back to Hunter Henry.
Then it'll be over.
I agree 100% with that.
All right, there you go. All right, let's close out your show with a round of Daily Daps.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the day.
Daps and hooks. Give me daps, because I'll be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up daps abound. Daps.
Daps.
All right, we'll start with MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, Daily Daps.
I'm Daily Dapping whoever is running the RC Cola Twitter account because they
have a Twitter account.
Believe it or not, right.
Beautiful.
I mean, I don't think anybody
drinks. Well, we know about it now because of this tweet.
I don't think anybody drinks RC Cola, like, outside of the state of Texas. But, you know, hey, they've been coming for folks today. I mean, it all started, obviously, there was the Covfefe, trend
sure.
last night after, you know, the president, you know, sent out a typo or a weird tweet or whatever.
That look like every drunk tweet you ever
pretty much that you ever sent. Like, you know, you tweet and then you pass out and
in
the morning
you're like, oh, that's such a good tweet or a text, and then you go to bed and you wake up and you've got
all these responses. You're like, oh,
100,000 retweets.
I want to know how did that not get autocorrected?
Who knows?
It was late East Coast time.
Who knows?
Like 1 o'clock-ish that it went out.
So RC Cola made a joke, like pretty much everybody else on Twitter, about it. A couple of people tried to, you know, give them a hard time, at which point they responded back with a couple of very snarky and outstanding memes. I'm not going to buy any RC Cola. Like, don't get it twisted. but whoever's running the account, like, kudos to you.
Good.
I'm undapping all the OTA practice reports and all the OTA chatter.
Amen.
That's on Twitter.
Amen.
Know? Like this morning when
I
see.
We got nothing else to do, man. Come on.
There are plenty of other things in this world going on right now that don't involve me going gaga over Kelvin Benjamin in shorts making a half-assed one-handed catch with nobody near him. Like, let's stop. You know, everybody is great on May 31st. Everybody's going to have an amazing season, except apparently Ryan Tannehill, who apparently stinks in practice right now. But, like, we're sitting here. Everybody's going just nuts over these, like, little reports of teams in shells not really going full steam, and everybody's talking about how great everybody is.
Man, people are still stretching their legs. It's crazy.
Let's stop. Let's just stop.
Hey, look, these beat reporters, they need to work, man. They need to get some stuff.
What's the excuse?
They need to create some content,
What's
man?
The excuse for the non-beat reporters in fantasy Twitter that just is, like, eating up every single gift they see?
I don't know. I don't know.
Stop it.
They need a side hustle.
Because they're addicts, and yes. This is their first hit of the year, man.
People,
that's right.
People stop taking an interest in things that pay us money.
Yeah, how dare you?
How dare you? Stop paying attention to football. Don't download fantasy. Wait, what am I saying?
Wait a second. Okay. Alex Gelhar, Daily Daps.
Daily undaps for me.
Okay.
To all of the people, mostly men, 99.9% men, who are up in arms over the few female-only Wonder Woman screenings taking place across America during the opening weekend.
Is this a thing?
This is
yes.
a thing.
There was a
this
bunch
is a thing?
There was a bunch of bull and I'll bleep that later, outrage by crybaby men like, this isn't equality, it goes both ways. Shut the hell up and get over yourself. If you're upset over, like, one random female-only Wonder Woman screening, she's an iconic, she's a feminist icon, one of the most iconic, like, superheroines in a predominantly male-dominated on the writing, art, and character side, get over yourself. It is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, and I cannot believe people are so up in arms about it.
What?
It is ridiculous.
Why
they are not
you...
banning you from seeing the movie.
Exactly.
They are celebrating women with a few showings on opening night. Guess what? There's more than one theater in your city. Or drive 20 miles. It is one of the stupidest things I've seen in 2017, which is saying a lot because it's 2017. I'm getting more heated about it over here, so that's basically all I'm going to say.
Wow, that's crazy.
If you're listening to this podcast and you were upset or thought that was some inequality or injustice, pause this podcast, go sit outside, and rethink your life and your priorities. And
well,
rant.
Here's my question.
And the person who is kind of, or one of the people who is the most butthurt, responded that we should have a guys-only viewing of Star Wars. And this was the same guy who wanted to boycott Star Wars Rogue One.
I'm sorry.
Same person.
Have the last guys only 1900 approximately years not been enough for you?
Hey, guess what? How about we get rid of the guys only committee to design our own healthcare?
That would be useful.
We could get rid of that.
I guess my question is how out of it do you have to be? How little do you have to have going on in your life that A, you would be upset by it? And then B, you would actually go and do something about it.
There are think pieces written about it.
Do you know what
people,
I'm saying?
People trying to like come up and protest this, or like buying tickets anyways and going to make a big stink. Like, get over yourself. Go to a different theater.
I don't know.
That's crazy.
Get all fired up about a GIF of Kelvin Benjamin making a one-handed catch on the internet.
Please send out some more bad Fifi tweets. Do anything.
Like I said, I always wonder about
that. Who's threatened by that?
I always wonder, like, you really have to have nothing else going on in your life that you would actually care that much to go and do something.
How would this offend you either? It's a simple, innocuous thing, empowering women and getting them together to celebrate something.
People are weird. People are crazy. So I do blame thoughts. But, I mean, you know, it's hard to be the thought police. But, man, I tell you what, if you're actually, like, mobilizing yourself and getting all worked up, that is just, come on now. Come on, bro.
You should be embarrassed.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
It is embarrassing.
Come on, dude.
Go
to the golf range. Go hang out. I don't know. Go crack a beer. Do something.
That's perfect. Golf.
There you go.
Like somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody.
Perfect.
Like Augusta.
I don't get it at all. I will daily dap the Huntington Library in Pasadena. Have you guys been?
I have. It's fantastic.
It is amazing.
I have not been to that.
Library is sort of a misnomer because there aren't a ton of books.
It's a total misnomer.
But it's a public gardens, and it's fantastic.
But I've been to the one in Huntington Beach, though.
That's not the one, that's
a different Huntington Library.
It's not the same. And actually, the name is like a double misnomer because it's the Huntington Library. It's in San Marino. So it's not in Huntington.
So what you're saying
or Huntington Park.
This is a bunch of lies.
And it's really not a library either.
It's not a library.
I mean, it's like a walking museum.
That's pretty cool.
It's really cool. Anyways, I went there. I was expecting a library, and I got whatever it is.
Were you going to check out, like, Red Badge of Courage or something?
No. Anyways.
Where's a copy of Fahrenheit 451?
Oh, man. By the way, they do have an exhibit there for a science fiction writer by the name of Octavia Butler. And I got to be honest with you, I wasn't totally – I had heard the name. I'm not that familiar with her work, but she's won so many awards in the science fiction industry. And this is the thing. Science fiction is an art dominated by male writers. This all ties in with what Alex Gilhar is saying, but it's dominated by male writers, and not only that, it's dominated by Caucasian male writers. This is an African-American woman who is a best-selling author in a genre dominated by, you know, Caucasian male. So,
This is crap. Where's the Caucasian male exhibit? I'm going to get mad online and write a think piece. Rabble, rabble, rabble.
They've got this exhibit, and it's got some samples of her work. But this is what really struck out to me. On the back of her spiral notebook, okay, she was down on herself, and this is early in her career. So she would write inspirational things to herself. And on the back of this, on the back of this spiral-bound notebook that she wrote her notes in, she wrote herself these inspirational lines. I shall be a best-selling writer. After Imago, each of my books will be on the bestsellers list of the LA Times, the New York Times, and the Washington Post, etc. My novels will go in onto the above list whether publishers push them hard or not. And she underlined that. Whether I'm paid a high advance fee or not, whether I win another award or not, this is my life. I write best-selling novels. And to me, it's so inspirational seeing that stuff because you could tell this is a moment in her life where she was down on herself. And she's extremely talented. And she also understands the climate in which she writes in, which is the science fiction industry, which, again, doesn't see a lot of folks like her in this industry. So I don't know, man. I'll tweet out the link because you can see, you know, the notes that she wrote for herself. She also wrote a bunch of different things about, you know, I will buy this is, by the way, this is very apropos for the time. But even back then, this is back in, I think, like 1980 or something, or 1975 or something, right? She wrote, I will help poor black youngsters go to college. I will hire a car whenever I want or need to. What else did she write here? She wrote something about her mom. She wanted to buy health care for herself and for her mom. Oh, this is it. I will get the best of health care for my mother and myself. These were inspirational goals that she had set for herself. But, man, I read this and I was like, holy hell. I got to read some of this lady's books, man. Very inspirational. It's at the Huntington Library. If you're in the LA area, please go check it out. I'm going to tweet out a link anyways of some of these notes that you can find online as well. All right, Adam Rank, close us out.
I am going to dap absolutely nothing because everything sucks.
What? What are you talking about? You usually come in with 5 or 7 or 10 different things.
Nothing.
You got.
Everything sucks.
I don't.
Because Mike Trout.
Oh. I was like, I feel like this is a setup.
Busted his
something.
Thumb.
I see. How long is he out for?
It long enough.
Well, I mean, what
he's
are we
gonna miss?
Here?
Well,
is it the 10-day DL?
He's supposed to miss 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, that's a long time.
That is a long time. That's pretty much the season. I mean, it's Trout, so he'll probably be back in 2. But for most mortals, like this is and you know what? I look. So I just hate everything now.
Okay.
Like nothing's fun, and there's so many good things happening to me baseball wise. Because I just realized today.
Yes.
Yesterday.
That the Dodgers are back in first place.
Is it because the Dodgers are in first place?
Are they really?
They are back in first place.
I know a lot of Angel fans hate the Dodgers. I'm like, I'm indifferent to them. They're not on TV.
I don't go to their
stadium. We don't know.
That's sort of how I feel about the Angels. Like, I don't hate them. I'm just kind of indifferent to
like
them.
Until
guys
I start
are in different like conferences.
It doesn't matter. Like
they,
it's like
they run up on each other a few times a year and right? Like whatever.
I worked for the Dodgers and I was still indifferent to them.
Okay.
Speaking of Dodgers, the Corona High Panthers.
Okay.
We'll be at Dodger Stadium on Friday night playing for the CIF title.
Oh, wow.
Going up against – we beat Phil Nevin's alma mater, El Dorado. Now we're going up against Lindsey Soto's alma mater, the Bull,
El Toro.
El Toro.
So okay. She yeah. hasn't been around. I haven't seen her on Total Access, so I don't know.
I believe she is probably preparing to have another child.
Is she?
I believe.
I didn't know.
I think so.
She never told me personally, and I was never going to ask. Never ask that question.
All right, so there you go.
Oh, and I also went to Cal State Fullerton. So I went to the top baseball high school in Southern California.
Okay.
The top baseball college in Southern California. If I had just set my light.
I'm sorry. Does Cal State Fullerton have 12 national championships in baseball?
In the time that Cal State Fullerton has existed as a Division I program, they have more World Series titles than USC, including a College World Series title led by Mark Kotze.
Yes, at the expense of USC.
Over
I,
them.
I understand.
1995.
I remember when he hit 2 bombs and got the save. I remember
wow,
all of that.
Wow, this
guys,
is
hold
deep.
Hold on. I have breaking news about all this baseball talk.
Wow, what an achievement.
they're breaking down college
yeah,
baseball,
that's
bro.
That's why we need to
oh,
get
I'm
out
sorry.
Of here.
This is the Daily Daps.
I'm sorry.
We were talking about RC Cola's Twitter feed, which, and if you wouldn't have done it, I would have. And by the way, Lechosa in Huntington Beach serves RC Cola.
Oh, good. There we
and
go.
Diet Right.
It all.
Wow.
Full it all circle. Comes full circle.
Diet you thought this right. was random. It was not.
Yeah. But by the way, and then that means our alma maters will be playing too. Or no, wait. That's right. You went to Sanford Safety School. You didn't go to actual Stanford.
Oh. Wow.
So I apologize.
Wow.
Wow.
I get confused.
Wow. Wow,
I
really?
Get confused sometimes.
Oh,
really?
My God.
Because you're a Stanford guy.
We have to, and you know we have to close the show out. That's why you're doing this, right?
You want to keep it going?
No, we can't. All right, so that's the show.
Wow.
Just a hailstorm at the end from Adam Rank. For MG, my God, Marcus Grant, and the WizKid from Wisconsin, Alex Gellar. I'm James Coe. We're out.